Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and we'll be talking to Anthony McCarthy in just a minute. I want to let you know the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. And right now we are joined in studio by Anthony McCarthy, who has had, before he came back to radio, an illustrious political career in this town and in Washington, D.C., and edited newspapers and did all kinds of things, and he's now stuck here with me.
Not so bad. Not so bad. I enjoy it.
Good to see you.
Great to see you, Mark.
Number here is 410-319-8888 to join us here this conversation. I want to know, we'll start off talking about our city here, what you think about the indictments of Sheila Dixon, the indictments of wealthy developer and owner of a huge bakery consortium, John Padarakis, and the new indictment on Helen Holton, who thought she was off the hook and is back on the hook, City Councilwoman Helen Holton. What it says about corruption and politics and power, what goes on in the city, what your thoughts are about Sheila Dixon and what has happened to her, and how you feel about that living in this community, and also what it might portend just for how we govern this town and what might happen next. What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. I mean, you thought it was dwindling down, and all of a sudden it exploded.
Well, we knew that the mayor was set to go on trial, Mark, September the 8th. So it was almost like this, like you said, a winding down, waiting for this trial to begin. The circuit court judge who's presiding over the case had dismissed several of the counts against the mayor. And I think if you were to talk to people in the streets like you and I do, there was a general sense of let's just wait and see what's going to happen here. And there was a sense also that things were moving in the mayor's direction, that when the judge looked at these counts, he made a judgment call and he dismissed them. Well, the prosecutor kind of gave us a hint that he wasn't done, that he was going to look to appeal those decisions. And then, of course, after the trial of Ron Lipscomb, very prominent developer, former boyfriend of the mayor of the city of Baltimore, he brought indictments again just over the last week. And I think, I don't know about you, Mark, but I knew that John Padarakis' name had been thrown around as participating in paying for this poll, possibly violating, allegedly violating a campaign violation of a campaign law about the amount that you can give in a campaign. And then sure enough, John Padarakis, who is, of course, a major, owns a major bakery consortium, as you said, he's also one of the city's largest developers in the city, was indicted. Helen Holton, who had had all the counts against her dismissed, was reindicted by the grand jury, and now a trial date will be set for Councilwoman Helen Holton. The ramifications for her, of course, is that it impacts her ability as a major player on the city council. She was once again stripped of her chairmanship by the city council president because she chairs a committee that oversees a great deal of economic development in the city of Baltimore.
She was given back the committee after the indictment was dropped.
She was. Right? She was. And Bill Cole was the acting chair. He relinquished the seat back to Councilwoman Holton. And then as soon as the indictments were made, before the evening was out, Council President Stephanie Rawlings-Blake had sent communication to Councilwoman Holton that she was going to be once again removed from that position. I think for a lot of us, we were not necessarily surprised by the re-indictment of Helen Holton. I think a lot of people taken aback by the indictment of John Padarakis. But the big news was the following day when the grand jury re-indicted the mayor of the city of Baltimore on several counts, including misappropriation of funds, perjury, which was not included in the original indictment. There's some counts of misuse of office and some other things. So this prosecutor, honing in, Mark, very specific charges. If you read that 13-page indictment, he makes some very, very shocking allegations against the mayor of the city of Baltimore. On the streets, people dismiss it. They read that indictment, Mark, and I think they start scratching their heads. And Annie Linsky at the Baltimore Sun today had a piece that really, I think, brought home what a lot of the political class in our city are thinking. They just kind of want it done. It's just been dragging on for so long. And it whether we like it or not, has a direct impact on the city's ability to go into Annapolis. We have a very strong mayoral system here in the city of Baltimore, but as long as this cloud is over her, it's very difficult for them to maneuver in Annapolis sometimes. As well as, let's be honest, we live in a city where politics is a blood sport, and there are people who are just waiting to see what's going to happen when this mayor goes to trial. I doubt if she'll go September the 8th. I think they'll get
They postponed it now, right.
And there are people waiting to see where they fall in this political ballet that's taking place. A lot of people beginning to make contacts with people about the possibility of running for mayor, even if she survives. Some people thinking she'll be weak.
What are your thoughts, whether it's the political questions of what happens now to Sheila Dixon, or maybe some people think more importantly what happens, what it says about power and politics and corruption and the sense of privilege that people in power seem to have? Whether or not these things are true or not, you know, and people talk about what John Padorakis is being indicted. And I mentioned to somebody who was of some note in this town the other week about that. And they said, well, you can't say things like that. You don't know that people make these deals. I said, well, look, anybody who ever walks in those halls of power, those people make deals all the time.
Every day.
At cocktail parties, over a cup of coffee, making a phone because you know people's personal numbers. I mean, most of you out there, you don't have the mayor's personal number, but other people do.
Mm-hmm.
And people use that number.
And they use
it. And they make those phone calls. So power corrupts in many ways. The most damning thing, perhaps, for Sheila Dixon as mayor is that this indictment has to do with taking gift certificates.
Gift cards.
64 of them that were destined for people in need.
The indictment specifically says that over the course of the years, the mayor has solicited from Ron Lipscomb, from Mr. Turner and others, several times, $500 chunks of gift cards. Now, she specifically is alleged, in addition to soliciting these cards for poor families, and he's alleging they were not used for poor families, and that at least 64 of them is the number that's being thrown around, that's the number that's in print media, were used by the mayor personally, or the mayor's family. And it's damaging in that everybody will get their day in court. But these allegations, Mark, as you just said, cause people across the city to make judgment calls about the influence that developers have in our city. The mayor is alleged to have turned to developers in the city and asked that they purchase these cards that she could give out and that city agencies could give out to poor families. You and I both know, because we've done shows on it and because we're close to the culture. That's our job. We know what's happening. Developers wield an enormous amount of power,
huge amount of power
in this city. And so, you know, other cities are watching what's going on here. Obviously, the president of the United States and his senior staff are watching what goes on here. The mayor has missed two opportunities to be with this president because of this very specific
situation. They wouldn't let her in.
They wouldn't let her in. They revoked an invitation to the White House that had been given. So there are ramifications for this. But Sheila Dixon, just last week and over the weekend, said, I am focused on running this city.
Well, she has to say that.
That's what I would advise her to say.
Yeah, she has to say that. And she may be, but that's what she has to say. And the other part is that these wouldn't be happening if her former boyfriend and developer, Ron Lipscomb, wasn't also indicted and then decided to make a deal with the prosecutor to turn state's evidence.
Well, the prosecutor is very clear that Ron Lipscomb is cooperating and that he is pleased with the information that they are receiving from Ron Lipscomb. And so I think that if you follow that logic, it is very clear that Helen Holton, John Padorakis, and the new indictments of the mayor come as a direct result of information from Mr. Lipscomb, who pled guilty to a misdemeanor campaign violation.
So, folks, what do you think about all that out here? As we face this kind of crime in our communities, and the city trying to struggle to make it in many ways, and we're facing this kind of political intrigue, what it says about power and politics, what it says about developers and your communities and the power they have and why they have that power. I'll give you some thoughts about that you can agree or disagree with in a minute. 410-319-8888. Anthony McCarthy's in the house talking about all that with us right now. Who's, of course, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show right here on WEA every Friday at 5 to 7 p.m. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com or just log on to the Mark Steiner Facebook page and join us there. And Renee in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Well, hi, guys. Thanks for having this show. I appreciate it very much. I just want to say, if these individuals are found guilty for committing these crimes, They need to be put under the jail. As bad as the streets are in Baltimore City, the roads are so terrible here that you need to get a front wheel alignment every 6 or 7 months. And it's not fair to us taxpayers. I got my taxes in the mail. I got property taxes. All this thievery is going on in Baltimore City or the United States. And thanks again for being here. Have a great week.
You too.
Thanks, Renee.
Well, I mean, that's a feeling of a lot of people in this town.
Mark, it's interesting that when you talk to people, I was recently at a barbershop over the last month, and there was a sign in the window which made a very disparaging remark about the mayor, encouraging her to resign. When I go out to restaurants or I go visit friends, people want to talk about it. There's a sense here that something is happening when it comes to the political class of our city. And we find ourselves in great economic strife. You and I have talked about it and how difficult it is to even do the work that we're doing and getting the underwriting that we need.
Right.
And people feel a particular certain way. And again, we have to, you know, remind people these are allegations. The mayor, John Padarakis, Helen Holt haven't been convicted of anything. But there is a sense around the allegations of gift cards that are supposed to go to poor families, to go help people, being kept and used by a mayor who gets paid very well. And if you saw a WBAL report over the weekend, has a lot of perks that go along with being mayor, including one of the largest security details of any mayor in the country. And so it is very, very, it's a touchy situation. And as you said, she has to say it, but she was very clear. She's not letting this distract her. I thought it was very interesting, an article online today where even Councilman Ricky Spector, one of the most ardent supporters of the mayor, said, look, this is a distraction. It's hard. It's hard for everybody to do their job waiting for this shoe to drop. And as most people, your listeners know and my listeners know, full disclosure, I worked for Sheila Dixon as her spokesperson. But now my job is just like yours, is to offer information as we receive it and research it and let people make their own decision about how this impacts her ability and our city's ability to move forward.
Let me, before we go back to the phones here and get all these people calling in, I mean, as somebody who's worked not just for Sheila Dixon, but you worked for Elijah Cummings for 3 years, you ran his office in Washington, D.C., you ran Sheila Dixon's office, you run for office yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been involved in this. From your perspective, what is it that when these things happen, these indictments happen, keep people like Sheila Dixon and others staying in there and fighting it? And when talk a bit about the personal political dynamic you see going on with people in this situation, not just Sheila by herself. But
Well, there is a sense when you talk to people and beyond the mayor, as you said, if you talk to other elected officials, there is a real sense of obligation and calling. And I think for those people who have been blessed, and it's a blessing to be entrusted by the citizens to be their spokesperson, the protector of their purse and others. There is a sense that I am going to hold on because people are counting on me. And there is a sense that I need redemption. And I look at Sheila Dixon. I knew her very well. When I worked for her, Mark, I was very close to her. When I worked for Elijah Cummings, very close to him. When I worked for Kurt Smoke, very close to the former mayor. And there is a sense that I have to survive this because people have entrusted me, and I don't want anyone to think I've done something wrong. There is also, but Mark, on the flip side of that, politicians have a habit, and I've talked about it before, so this won't come as a surprise to people who listen to me or have known me for many years. There is a sense of entitlement that comes very quickly in public life. I see it in members of the legislature. There is a sense of entitlement that comes that can be very intoxicating for those not only in public elected office, but those around them. And I've had the pleasure of working around some of the most powerful people in the city. And when it comes to relationships with developers, when it comes to relationships with other elected officials, when it comes to relationships that you are able to put people in jobs, whether they're agency heads or people, their children or their spouses, there is an intoxicating impact on the elected class, not just here in the city of Baltimore, but around the country. And that entitlement can be dangerous. And when you have people who say they are entitled to three automobiles, when you have people who say they're entitled to 10 security guards, when people begin to raise question marks about that. Is that about public service or is that about the perks of public service? And I'm all about public relations and PR. I often am shocked, not just by this mayor, but other elected officials, Kwame Kilpatrick in Detroit, Congressman Jefferson in Louisiana. There is a real sense of frustration for those of us, Mark, who observe black political leaders in this country.
And besides the black man,
am
I saying his name wrong?
Blagojevich.
Thank you. Blagojevich,
that's right.
The governor of Illinois.
There are many. You're right. But a particular frustration for me watching as over the last 2 years, we've seen a lot of African-American political leaders caught in really difficult and embarrassing situations. And whether they like to admit it or not, Mark, as someone who went through a horrific, embarrassing public situation, this
– And exonerated, I might add.
This has to impact how you operate every day, whether you admit it or not. And so it impacts the city. It impacts how the council operates. It impacts how people position themselves. We see it. I'm sure you have seen it as you've watched the last budget cycle, how they challenge Sheila Dixon. The council never challenges the mayor's budget priorities. They pushed her, and she compromised.
Folks, what do you think about the state of the city of Baltimore, the state of our politics, the power and what it does to people, the sense of entitlement, the relationships between city and developers and people in power, and what this says about where we're going and what should be done? I mean, what do you want to see happen? What do you want to see happen, whether it comes to the mayor, John Padarakis, Helen Holton, but the larger picture of how you want to see this change and how does it change? 410-319-8888. I'm Mark Steiner, sitting here with Anthony McCarthy. 410-319-8888, and James in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Well, James, you know, I'd just like to say the biggest issue in this city that I see, and in most cities, is that in 1957, they used to knock doors down to get dope. And then they was telling the man that gave it to him, I poured it in the toilet. So the man said, I'm not going to tell you this, you pouring it in the toilet, I'll put you out on the street and make it a constitutional issue. And every neighborhood where I've lived at in this city, they can stand out on the corner, broad daylight, sell dope, and they're supposed to be looking for them. I just can't understand that. So every June, when kids get out of school, by September, they've changed their attitude. They don't say mister no more. And they're trying to be like the other kids, so they say things they don't even know what they're talking about. And it just happens every year for the last 20 years. That's why they're killing it. You've got a saturated market. You know, it used to be 10 years ago, you knew who a drug dealer was because he wore a $385 exercise suit, $100, $150 pair of tennis, $2,000 necklace, $5,000 ring, and he let everybody know he got his hair cut twice a day, twice a week. They look like bums out here. All they do is making money to food. They don't see any other entrepreneurs. You know, are we crazy?
Wow. Well, there certainly, Mark, is a culture of drug dependency and addiction in our city that is feeding the illegal activities, which is feeding the gang activity that we see exploding in the city of Baltimore. So he is right. He connected everything from education to unemployment to homelessness all around this drug culture. Now, we have seen it. Now, technically, Mark, and I was listening to you the other day, I'm a big fan of the Mark Steiner Show, but we were talking about the fact that crime has dropped in the city, violent crime has dropped. Very focused plan by this police commissioner and this mayor, and they've seen violent crime drop. But in certain neighborhoods, Mark, we see a consistent violence associated with the drug culture and with gang culture in our city. And the explosion last week with the shooting rampage where there was such a large number of people shot at a cookout. When you talk to people who are in East Baltimore, and I had the pleasure of going with some of the staff here over to Ashland and other areas and just talking to people on their steps, they were laughing at us, Mark. They couldn't believe the media was making a big deal out of this shooting. They say, this happens every day here. You may not hear about it because it's not a fatality, but shootings and violence is part of the culture here. And I kind of felt bad. I kind of felt disconnected. And that feeds into a lot of the resentment, Mark. If you read certain websites, certain media websites, when people talk about, look at what's going on in our community, and this state prosecutor is going after the mayor with gift cards. There's a lot at stake here.
Who feel that people going after Sheila Dixon for gift cards is specious.
That's right.
And some people will call it a racist move going after a black mayor, and for what people consider petty crimes. The other side of that coin, though, is that if it is in fact true that any elected political official has to be clean, you can't leave the door open for somebody to come get you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, even if it is petty, if you shouldn't take gift cards meant for the poor to buy gifts for your family.
And besides,
if it's true,
but and beyond the obvious, it goes to the character of the elected officials that we are entrusting with, not just the idea that they are in charge of our taxes, that they're in charge of the education of our children, that they're responsible for the safety in our streets, but we want to believe that we are electing people who have the same character and integrity that we do, that we are asking to represent us at those moments when those major decisions in our lives are made. And I think that, regardless of, and again, it's allegations, and she will have her day in court. Everyone will have their day in court. But this idea that the state prosecutor should not be going after Sheila Dixon or other people over something that people consider to be petty. I think when people think about that and when they read the indictment and inform themselves, I think they want justice. I think Sheila Dixon wants justice. I think she wants her name cleared. But we've got to, as a city, unfortunately, go through this process. It's not just Sheila Dixon and Helen Holton and John Padarakis going through this process. We are all going through this process. And it's something that's playing out on a national stage as people look at our city and wonder about the integrity of our elected officers.
Well, it's true. I mean, the sad thing is that you watch, as we talked about earlier, the fact that President Obama came through town on a campaign whistle stop on his way to the White House, did not allow Sheila Dixon up on stage in front of City Hall. She was there.
In front of her City Hall. It's all of our City Hall.
But in front of her City Hall. Mm-hmm. And then at the mayor's conference in Washington, D.C., disinvited her from coming to the White House as one of the mayors attending the conference in Washington. I mean, it makes you feel like we're Chicago in a worse time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Let's see what people think about this. 410-319-8888. Mark, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi, gentlemen.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, now. Hey, I was wondering, if Mayor Dixon, irregardless, guilty or not guilty,
mm-hmm.
how will the city council respond to that situation?
What do you mean?
Well, he has a cloud over his head. And irregardless of the outcome of a trial, if she is found, let's say, not guilty.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, not guilty. Everything's good.
Right.
How will this city council basically respond to her within the context of their own districts, let's say, their own council district?
That's an interesting question.
That's a hell of a question.
That's an interesting question. Anthony, what do you think?
Well, Sheila Dixon remains very close to a majority of the members of the city council. She has a majority who tend to support and block her legislative priorities. And I think that if, in fact, Sheila Dixon is acquitted, you will still see politicians tend to support each other. Now, you may see elected people standing by this mayor if she's acquitted. And she would have to be acquitted to be removed from office. The city council has no authority.
Has to be convicted.
That's right. I'm sorry. Yes, she'd have to be convicted to be removed from office. The city council has no authority, and the state constitution and charter does not give anybody the authority to remove the mayor from public office. I think that she'll be fine. She'll be weakened. She'll be weakened. She may even be challenged in a way that she would not have been challenged in her reelection if she's acquitted. If she is convicted, Mark, and she only has to, regardless of the number of counts and indictments against her, she only has to be convicted of one felony. And if she is convicted of one felony, by law, the mayor has to resign her position. And she'll be, she can set the timetable, but she would have to resign almost immediately upon the conviction, regardless of when the sentencing would take place. And then the city council president, through the charter of our city, the city council president automatically becomes mayor, just like Sheila Dixon became mayor when Martin O'Malley became our governor.
So there's a lot of jockeying going on. I mean, would that mean people are waiting for this so they can kind of maneuver themselves in the position to run or to become the next president of city council?
That's right.
or all the rest.
And it trickles down. You just said something so very interesting. And, you know, I'm a political junkie, so I watch these things. But it's not just a question of who becomes mayor. It's about who becomes city council president. It's about those council elections that follow that period. And where do you stand in all of this? And will it impact you? Will challengers to the members of the city council, challengers to people who serve in the state legislature, will they ask questions about where were you on this issue? When it came to corruption at Baltimore City Hall?
It's very hard to say how this is going to tumble out. I mean, because I don't want to see it convict people before they're
even going to court.
But let's see what our listeners think about what they think should be happening and what your thoughts are about the situation that we face, because it does affect all of us in this city. And then after the break, I have some thoughts about developers and the only way I think we can change that. But first, let's go to phones. 410-319-8888. Rosalind in Baltimore, you're on the air.
I just wanted to thank the both of you, Mark and
Anthony.
Anthony, I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I listen to you all the time. I just want to thank both of you for your honesty and keeping all of us in the city of Baltimore abreast of what's going on. Those of us that don't have time to read that 13-page statement, but are very, very interested. And I totally agree with you, Mark. She has to say that it's business as usual. But all of us who really work know that it is not business as usual.
Right.
And those of us in the city, people, out citizens, with so many other things, important things going on, are being hurt by this. And I just wanted to thank the both of you for keeping us both abreast of these things. I love the show, your show, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Rosalind. We both could use that today.
That's
thank you
right.
so much for that.
That's a good pickup.
We have a lot of people who are calling in. Chanda Namdi, Chanda Namdi, Marie, Eve. So we're going to get to all your calls, Darius. We're going to take a very, very brief break here and come right back to take all of your calls. We sit with Anthony McCarthy, talk about what's going on in our city. We want to hear all of your comments and thoughts. So please don't go away and stay with us. It's very important. And I'll reflect a bit with Anthony on the power of developers in business and how you might change that in the state of Maryland, but I don't think they'll have the gumption to do it. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to my Facebook, Twitter away. We'll take your comments on the air. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I'm here with Anthony McCarthy. We're talking about the state of politics in our communities, the indictments of Sheila Dixon and Helen Holton, mayor and city councilwoman, and developer and political operative, John Paterakos, who owns H&S Bakery, among many other things.
Among many other things.
Mostly in Harvard. Lots of stuff as well. 410, well, maybe not most, but a portion of it. 410-319-8888 is the number here. I said we go right back to the phones, and we'll go in this order. Chanda and then Namdi, the next two callers up, and Maria and Eve and Darius. 410-319-8888. Chanda, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I want to say that your show is great, and I love it to Mark, you know, Mark, both of you, Mark and Anthony, on your show. You always have a really wonderful insight. I just wanted to say that the reality is, like, as African Americans, we have got to realize that just in general, the playing field is not the same for us when it comes to politics and any leadership positions that we are able to attain in the United States. So whether she's indicted or not, politicians and leaders that, you know, who are basically, like, there for African-Americans to, like, basically show that we can do the job, have got to get away from thinking that they can get away with anything if they are. Because I know that power is very, you know, intoxicating. So you just have to, like, be a very ethical individual. You know, you look at Obama. He has had to be on his P's and Q's 24/7.
Yep.
Before he was elected, they had to go through the whole drug thing, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but he had to be extraordinary to be the president. You know, then you have, like, the whole Gates debacle. Obama's called someone stupid, but now he has to retract it and have, you know, Gates and the gentleman who was wrong to come to the White House. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like there's always going to be a constant thing where African Americans have to prove themselves. So the thing is, don't do anything that's unethical, so we don't have to deal with it, because people are always going to be looking at us.
Shonda, you have some very strong points. Now, let me throw out a little curveball on what you just said and see what you think and what you think, Anthony, and what Shonda was saying. Because I've really wrestled with this a lot. As an old civil rights worker, a lot of the people that came out of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, which was my group down south, who became some of the bravest leaders in the civil rights movement, who stood up to the police and kind of on the other side of King in some ways. Not people like Julian Bond, who was not indicted, not mm-hmm. people like John Lewis, who was the leader of SNCC, but so many others. Ivanhoe Donaldson in Washington and Marion Barry and a number of others I could mention.
James Farmer. I mean, there were...
Who got indicted
mm-hmm.
And convicted for corruption. And one of the weird theories I have, and this may hold no water, it may mean nothing, all right, is that at the end of segregation, when black people finally got a chance to have political power in America, gaining political power, getting elected to mayor, getting elected to city council and mayor and taking over jurisdictions, it was at a time just at the cusp of the Daily Time, Mayor of Chicago, the first Mayor Daily, and the mayors here in Baltimore before that, who were really corrupt. But blatantly corrupt, and they got away with it.
Mm-hmm. They were bosses. They ran machines.
And they got away with it. Then black folks come in and take over cities, and some of the newly elected black officials tried to play the game the way all the old white bosses played it, but the game had changed. And John Kennedy became president. Robert Kennedy ran for office. There was a different moral, ethical tenor, so that the game got played differently. In some ways, because of like the power of developers and the power of people who have wealth in government doesn't change, but the game is played different. And sometimes some of the newly elected black officials never quite figured out how to play the game right and left the door open and got indicted. I might be a little off the wall, but I've been thinking about that a bit.
No, I think it's a very plausible theory. I think that you're on to something. I think the timetable makes sense. It is a situation, Mark, and if we're speaking honestly, and I think your callers want us, because I don't want anyone to think that I hold punches when it comes to Sheila Dixon or public officials because of my friendship with some of them, and there's a personal affection I have for Sheila Dixon. But the truth of the matter is, Mark, you are on to something. And I think that if we look around the country, that there is probably enough evidence to bear out. And there are so many people, and I don't know if you would say this, but I know people say to me all the time, you know, Sheila Dixon's not doing anything that no one else, all of her predecessors did. And she's just being judged differently because she's an African-American woman. And I just shake my head and I challenge those ideas. But in fact, they're ideas that a lot of people hold. There is a new elected class that is operating the way their predecessors did. They learned very well the game. And it is a very bloody sport. It's a tough game. But they take liberties. And some of them have been convicted
right.
And left office because of the liberties that they take. And they'll argue, look, this is part of the culture.
Well, let's see what our listeners
James
say.
Sharp in New Brunswick. I was just thinking about him.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Newark, I mean.
410-319-8888. Let's go back to the phones. Tell us what you think about all this. And Namdi, you're on the air.
Thank you for letting me come on. And actually, even the statements that you just made kind of added to my initial statement I made to the person to take the call. I think it's ironic that Sheila Dixon and Helen Holton would be under investigation for possible criminal activity. And then we also discuss drug activity and shootings in throughout the city. And my question is, if you have corrupt political leadership, why would you expect anything different in the city as far as crime, policing of people, and those kind of things? I think it's the logical conclusion. And what's really unfortunate for me is that even as you had the discussion, which I think is very interesting, about standards being changed now, is that what isn't considered illegal in politics has so greatly disadvantaged the African community that it should be a crime. You have
right.
no economic development.
Right.
No one. That is not a charge on Sheila Dixon's dossier.
That's
There's
right.
no charge about BGE rates being increased and the profits being escalated. the education system being so inferior. How do you expect to compete when half your students you graduate every year are not even capable of reading and writing and getting jobs? It leads to criminal activity. And to have a discussion about what may be or may not be petty crimes, what may be illegal relationships to developers, when in fact you have a whole city that's being bled legally in front of everyone in City Hall, is the real crime. And it's not acceptable just to say that black officials are playing a game and now being judged by a different standard. People need an ability to make judgment on their politicians. We would hope that elections are those opportunities for people to make decisions. But so far, all I see is the same new class, as you said, of politicians who play the same game, running against each other, and essentially you get the same choices.
Right.
I think we need some new choices and some new options.
Look, I think you raised some very cogent points. Let me just say that before we go back to the phones and Marie Shirley and Ms. Johnson, the next callers up, is that when I said the game has changed, what I mean is, look, if you look at Congress right now today and you look at the huge amount of money, $68 million in this last quarter alone that was spent by the pharmaceutical industry to lobby Congress to water down an already, I think, watered down health bill from President Barack Obama. That's legal. See, to lie to people about what's going on in health care and to maneuver people in Congress, that's legal. That's where the game has changed. A lobbyist may not be able to hire in the White House, but a former congressman can be a lobbyist and lobby his colleagues. You know, and money flows. And money flows to people who vote in a certain way. That's legal. Taking, if it's in fact true, money for gift certificates, gift cards for poor people is not legal. Paying for a poll for $12,000 is not legal. But bundling money worth millions of dollars to influence a politician is legal. So, you know, it is skewed, but it is what it is. Not that it all shouldn't change. So, I mean, that's what, when I talk about different standards, I meant, and I think you're right, I think it does affect people in this town. It does affect a young kid on the corner who sees a mayor being indicted, you know, that gives them more credence and gives them more backbone to just keep dealing the drugs they were dealing in the first place.
And Mark, I have to tell you, when I was with Sheila Dixon, I can recall just hundreds of letters that came in from young women across the country to this mayor saying, thank you. You're an inspiration to me.
Right.
And I know, because I have the pleasure of going out to meet with young people and talk to people, and I attend community meetings, and people stand up and they ask that same question about, now, of course, we all know, and the argument is, well, the role model should be in your home and your parents.
Yeah, but right.
It is what it is. And the truth is, there are people who are really waiting, as they said in The Sun today, they're waiting for the outcome, because the implication here, not just for Sheila Dixon, but for our entire city, is so great.
And it is tough. I mean, I'll admit, as Anthony has, I mean, that I'm not like close friends with Sheila Dixon. But I've known her since 1976.
You have. That's right.
When we were both counselors together in a thing called Baltimore Prep, working with kids who got kicked out of school and came to us to get their lives together. And, you know, and I've always been fond of her. I think she's a really nice person. And so to see this happen is, I think, a shame for our city. It's a shame for her. I hope it proves not to be true.
Me too.
But if it does prove to be true, 410-319-8888. Marie, you're on the air.
Evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Marie.
Hi. I'm calling not in reference to any politician out here, but that the streets problem in America and Baltimore, they're getting too dangerous, and you probably won't have an answer, so don't feel bad. But I was told by three people, do not walk down my street anymore. I'm not going to name the street. I don't want anybody to get harmed or anything like that. They were not policemen. And it's sad, because the street that I live off, and I've been walking down that street for years, if not decades, just to get exercise, because I'm a senior. And now I've been told by some people who are concerned about me, which I'm, you know, happy to say. No longer should I walk down there, so I had to change my whole route and select another street that they offered, that I would be watched, and if anything happens, I can come in to the convenience store and be protected. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it just makes me cry. And then someone told me over the phone this Sunday, I think it was, that 40 people in Chicago have been shot. Then I heard later on Sunday, 75. So, gentlemen, you all have a good evening.
You too.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to do something to make this a safer community for all of us. And that's part of what we've been talking about the last hour and why we're going to try to stay on this issue, try to make this a community forum on the air for people to kind of wrestle with this all the time until we get to a place where it actually works. 410-319-8888. Let's see who's been waiting the longest. Shirley, you're on the air. Shirley, you there?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Okay. I'm confused, Mark, and your guest. About this special prosecutor. Ehrlichman appointed him.
Ehrlich. Governor Ehrlich, yes.
Uh-huh. Why is the special prosecutor still in place? And who does he answer to? And why did O'Malley not remove him like he did any other person that wasn't a part of his administration? And why? And what does his office have on Lipscomb that he would give up Sheila Dixon?
Okay, that's a good question. Anthony, want to grab some of those?
Well, the Office of the State Prosecutor is a constitutional office here in the state of Maryland. When there is a vacancy in that position, the governor appoints that state prosecutor. This prosecutor, Mr. Rohrbaugh, was appointed by Governor Bob Ehrlich. But that prosecutor cannot be removed by the governor or really any of the legislature or any other person. They answer to technically the governor, just like every other appointee, but they have independent status, Mark, because they're an investigative agency. And so they have to have a certain amount of autonomy so that they can do what by constitution and state charter they have been created to do. Governor O'Malley did not have or does not have the authority to remove this state prosecutor. He can't fire this state prosecutor. There probably, if we were to research the law or research the agency, there may be some grounds for removal that are probably would be some, I would think, the bar on that would be pretty extraordinary. So that's why. So I've heard that a lot. He was appointed by a Republican governor. He is admittedly a Republican,
right.
Comes from a very prominent, a wealthy Republican family,
right.
Here in the state of Maryland. And so, she raises some very interesting questions that have been raised here on this air, raised, of course, in public conversations about whether or not there is some sort of partisan slant to this investigation, that the Republicans are seeking to embarrass the Democratic establishment of the state of Maryland. And so she raises some very interesting questions that I've heard before about this state prosecutor. It's not a special prosecutor.
Right.
It is actually a sustained position in the state of Maryland.
And given the record of George W. Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, is that right?
Yes.
Oh, George W.
No,
Bush.
George W. Bush. Herbert Walker's
I'm
the
having
father.
A rough day with
the
names, Dave, for some reason. George W. Bush. And what he did to federal prosecutors around the country and the influence of people like Karl Rove and others in firing prosecutors who would not go after Democrats underhandedly to push a Republican agenda. It's a legitimate question to ask. Not saying it's true, but it is a legitimate political question to ask. Anthony, I think, was very clear, and he's right, that Governor Martin O'Malley had no power to remove him, neither does the state legislature, unless he does something wrong, his term runs out, they'll find someone else
to
take his place.
Mm-hmm.
So, good question. 410-319-8888. Ms. Johnson, you're on the air.
Good evening. Some of the points that you made this evening, both of you have been on point. I do want to comment, Mark, on what you said about the political game. And, you know, I think the tragedy of it is that too many politicians do get into the game, but the truth of it is that when we elect them, especially African Americans, we are electing them because we want to believe that there are going to be people in office who understand what we're trying to do in our communities, what we're trying to do in our state, and will work with us to change, not just us, but with the whole community in all races. And so when it's a special responsibility when you're in an office and you're an African American, because there's not that many of us who can run for office and win. So when you do get in office, there's a special responsibility that you carry, and you cannot be like anybody else. And you can't play the games, quote, games and that other people play. That's number one. Number two, honestly, because they do, those games do happen, and because right now we're doing a lot of political posturing and pondering and asking questions, we still have a city where seniors, like the one who just called you recently, cannot yes. walk her own street. We right. have children who cannot play in playgrounds. We have trash on streets, and we have tons of vacant houses. So with all of the discussions are over, those things still exist, and the quality of life has been diminished in our city because we are not focused on the things that are most important. Have a good evening.
Thank you so much. Anthony.
Well, she said she made some very strong points. And the interesting thing, Mark, again, speaking very frankly, I was at there's a restaurant in East Baltimore called Eastern Carryout, right on Eastern Avenue, very small, little tiny restaurant I go to every Saturday to meet with friends and to escape for a little bit. Well, it's one of those places where political conversations are the normal fare there. And I have to tell you exactly what this young lady said just now is what so many different political persuasions, they're like, can we focus? And there's some resentment towards the state prosecutor, but there's also resentment towards the elected officials in our city. Can we focus? Can we be outcomes oriented? Can we trust that people, when they tell us what their priorities are, that those are their priorities? Or are they worried about what kind of vehicle they're being driven around in? Are they worried about how many vacations they get to take? Are they worried about making sure they get the cost of living increases and salary increases, Mark, that too many people who are struggling in the city don't have the benefit of? And so I think that it is incumbent on elected officials when they come before the voters to be very clear about what their vision is. But it also rests on our shoulders, those who make the ultimate decision when you go in that voting booth and make a decision, that you are comfortable with what has been shared with you about the vision of your city and of your neighborhood and your community. So as much as a lot of the burden does rest on Sheila Dixon and Stephanie Rawlings-Blake and Joan Pratt and Patricia Jessamy, and the list goes on and on, it really does the ultimate responsibility for the trash that is piled up in our streets, for the crime that we see in our communities, for the miseducation of our children, rests with us. And we have to own that responsibility. And because, Mark, when we look at those numbers, and I've had the honor of being with you on election nights here, for years we've done this together, and the sheer it's heartbreaking at the people who do not participate in the process. And so I think there's enough, I don't want to say blame to go around, but there's certainly enough responsibility to go around.
And we all have to take responsibility for all of this. I mean, it is it's our community, and we have to step up to it, as the men were saying on our show the last hour.
That was a great point. Hour.
410-319-8888. Nehemiah, you're on the air.
See, I think that if Sheila had of acted like she wanted to help us, and when I say us, I'm talking about the Moorish community, and when I say Moorish, I mean African Americans in Baltimore City. If she acted like she wanted to keep us with 2 days trash, and if she wanted to keep our taxes lowered and tell people about the where the taxes, why our taxes are going up, and I forgot exactly what they called it. When it's called banks have to make a certain assessment of the city, and then they have a bond rating, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
so it's a bond rating, right?
Yeah.
Right, and that's what Sheila. I don't think she really thinks the citizens, African American citizens in Baltimore, are unintelligent. And even if they're, and if that's what she thinks, still. Let the people know and communicate with the people what is really going on and how she is being affected by that. And that's basically what I wanted to say.
Thank you so much. 410-319-8888. LaVon, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for
Mark
calling.
And hi, Anthony.
I
am 100% behind Sheila Dixon, and I'm just the question that I have is, I thought statute of limitation had expired on this whole charge issue, whether or not these charges were coming about. I'm confused about how come this is still before us again. They're saying new charges, but it sounds like the same stuff. If it is that she was not obligated to report somebody, this developer's gifts to her as they had a relationship, then why are they kind of bringing this back up? It sounds like the only big issue that they have now is those, you know, the gift cards or whatever. Now that seems to have ratcheted up from $250 to now $1,000. So I'm just confused. How is it that they were able to bring up more charges when I thought statute of limitation had expired? That's my question.
Well, I think two things to answer your question. Again, I'm not an expert at this, but I try to read very carefully.
Right.
The state prosecutor was able to, at the when the charges were dismissed, when several charges were dismissed against the mayor by the judge who's presiding over the case, it gave this, this prosecutor the opportunity to go before a new grand jury. Now, this is a separate grand jury that indicted the mayor on this second round. And what the prosecutor, which is his prerogative, Mark, has decided not to pursue the original indictments, but he is only trying the mayor on the new indictments, which are more pointed. They do sound the exact same. They're about gift cards and not reporting. And
and she did have to, if in fact she got these gifts from Ron Lipscomb, even if they were lovers and traveling the country together, because of his relationship to the city with developing in the city, developments in the city, she had to report those gifts,
but
if in fact she got them.
But there is an argument being made by her defense team, Mark, that she was, that she may not have been aware that Ron Lipscomb was doing business with the city because he was not a prime developer on a lot of the projects where he was receiving.
We will come back on this and more. Anthony McCarthy, thank you so much.
Oh, it's great to be with you always, Mark.
And listen to my dear friend Anthony McCarthy this Friday, 5 o'clock, 5 to 7 p.m. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Urbanite, Baltimore's free magazine of ideas and innovation. August is Urbanite's annual stories issue featuring fiction, poetry, memoir, plays from the region's emerging writers. Plus a sneak preview of upcoming art season, a look at changes in troubled Sandtown, and tall tales from readers. Urbanite is available at over 700 locations. Please visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of our drop locations. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered today by Jamar Jones with help from Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Devin Finley, and Bradley Klodner. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.